Everyone, welcome to KUA's October 6th regular meeting. And please join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic,
for which it stands,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice
for all. This is for all.
Who's that echo? It's someone.
Madam Chair, you've got the mayor on the call. And that was the mayor.
Okay, the mayor. Okay. Hello, mayor.
Hello, Olga. How are you? Okay, so we go on to approval of today's agenda. Can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Anyone in favor, please say yes.
Yay.
Yes.
Everyone against it? Hearing no no's, agenda is approved. Installation of new board members. I call on to counsel, general counsel.
Margie Bowles will swear in our vice chair for another term.
Not sure it's a new board member.
Welcome, Manny, to a new term.
Thank you.
Now we go on to item E, election of officers for 2021 to 2022 term period. I can...
Madam Chair. Just a point of order for procedure. At the last board meeting, Director Ortega indicated that at this board meeting, he was planning to make a motion to move the current slate of officers in as elected for another term. Director Ortega had approached me before the meeting and said, do you think that we can do that? And I was correct in telling him the charter and bylaws allow for that. There's no prohibition. But I hadn't had a chance to double-check Robert's Rules of Order. And Robert's Rules of Order allows it, but they require an additional step. And so... if you want to do this, what would happen is first someone would need to make a motion to depart from our customary election process because our customary process is each office is moved individually. And that's called an incidental motion. Jody had, done the Robert Rule, that excellent Robert's Rules of Order presentation. And motions about procedure departing from an existing procedure are considered incidental motions. They require a second, there's no discussion, and they have to pass by a supermajority. Robert says two-thirds, which for us that would be four, because we don't have, six board members or three. So that would require a supermajority of four. There's no discussion on the motion. There's a motion to do it. Director Ortega suggested there's a second, and then you have to pass it. It has to be by supermajority. Once that passes, then Director Ortega or whoever wishes can make the main motion to move the entire slate to be elected for the next term. So I apologize for not having that in my back pocket last meeting. But if we want to follow Robert's Rules of Order, which we usually do, that is the process. It's two steps.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, can I have a motion to bypass the extending procedure and have an incidental?
Yeah, are there any questions on what I, before we get to a motion that you can't discuss, I want to make sure that everyone understands what I just said. Are there any
anybody
questions?
Anybody has any questions on what he
on
just said?
On the process?
I don't have any questions on the process, but if we can have some discussion, I do have one item I wanted to bring up.
So the way the Roberts rules would work is that first we would have the, if we're going to do it this way, we'd have the motion to change the process where there's no discussion on that.
Okay.
And then once, if the change of the process passes, then the main motion to move the whole slate, then discussion, full discussion on that can take place.
But it doesn't pass.
Then we go back to the current process we have, which is you go each office by office, and every office has an opportunity for a motion, a second, and a discussion every nomination.
Can Director Ray make have a discussion, pose us a question?
Yes, you can pose questions for the process. Well, you are going to want before the motion carries to do the entire slate for the next year, you want discussion at that point. Is that correct?
Right, that's correct.
Yeah, and that's permitted. So, Director Ortega, if the first motion passes to change the procedure, then there'd have to be a second motion to elect the current slate of officers for another term. At that point, you have full discussion on the motion, and that's when Director Hemphill will be ready to raise her question. Does that work?
That should work, yeah.
Before she gets something to say?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I thought
it was... elected before she gets something to say?
No. The way it works is, and I apologize, it's very confusing. The process, you would vote to change the process.
Okay.
If that passes, then Director Ortega would have to then move his motion to elect everyone who's currently in their positions to another term. At that point, before the election, there would be the opportunity for full discussion of that motion.
There's only three steps instead of
four or five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have a motion to change the procedure?
I move.
I second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay. It looks like motion is approved. Everyone said yes.
No,
you still have to take the vote, but there's no discussion.
Vote.
So all in favor. Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of the motions?
Aye.
To change
Aye.
The procedure?
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
Anybody opposing it? No noise, so we approve the motion.
That passes unanimously. Okay. So now we can change the process, and you can move the motion you mentioned at the last meeting.
My motion is to elect the same slate of officers that are in place right now for the next FY, for this FY.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Everyone in favor?
No discussion. Now we have a discussion.
So, Ray, you have anything?
Yes. My question is, and this is from, you know, I've had a chance to think about the comment that was made at the last board meeting. And 2 years ago, it was decided that we would change officers each year. At least that was my understanding. Maybe I need further clarification, but that was how I understood it. And this would put us back into essentially the same way it was working prior to 2 years ago, where essentially the officers did not change.
Prior to changing, it was the chairperson who stayed in office basically until his time ran out, until the individual's time, his or her time ran out. So if they had 4 years left, 3 years left, whenever they got, it would run through that. If I recall correctly, we could check the minutes.
As long as I've been here, I remember us changing every year, or everybody voting every year, and whoever came up.
And it's not, I remember is that the same individual got elected the years since I've been here, before Jeannie took over and then Catherine took over for her last year. And my recommendation was a couple of years ago was that that we look at offices being held for 2 years. And like I said, we could check the minutes or we could have another discussion. And my thinking behind that was is that We're here for 10, we're here normally for 10 years as a rule. It could be 5, but it could be 10. And so when you first get elected, you're just on the board. And then every 2 years, everyone moves up. So by in theory, it doesn't happen all the time, but in theory, everyone during those 10 years that they're in office will have at least an opportunity to be the chair of the board, go through all the, so 2 years, then assistant secretary, then secretary, then vice chair. And so by the time their term is up in the 10 years, everyone will have an opportunity to hold every office. It's been, I'm quite sure, it's probably been in the past, individuals that did never, that left, and didn't have that, and didn't have that opportunity. Somebody said something?
So the thing is that 10 years, they all aren't appointed at the same time.
Exactly.
So not everybody would be in the same schedule of 10 years. So
right.
You're going to miss out on some people who only have 2 years left or something like that. So I kind of like it the way it is. I think that I would love to see every one of us have a turn at the office. And if it's every 2 years, you're going to make some people are going to consider.
Okay.
Because of where they are now in the process. In 2 years, you know, they'll be on board. So, that's, I don't think I'm for it. I like electing officers every year.
Okay, so Raymond, do you have any comments?
As the junior guy here, this is my first official year this month. I would go with the majority. I have not been here long enough to have an opinion either way. I can see both sides of the discussion, but as a junior guy here, I would go with the majority of what their wishes are.
So, Ray, you're leading against changing the procedure?
Well, the motion that's at the table at the moment is whether to take a look at the current thing and reschedule. My concern is that we just changed this process 2 years ago, and to me it sounded like we were returning to the way it was occurring prior to that. And that was my concern, is I didn't understand. I've never heard anything about doing something for 2 years. This was the first I'd heard of that.
Okay. Well, just to move this forward so we don't continue. Actually, I would withdraw my motion, and whoever second could draw, and we'll go, and then I'll recommend that we just go back to the original way to vote.
I don't think he made a motion, did he?
No, not a motion, yeah.
Who was the second?
We moved to change the procedure, and we voted unanimously to do it. Now, you could move to, you were part of the prevailing party, so you could move to strike that, to basically go back to reverse what we just did.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Yes, any of us could do that.
Okay, so I make that motion, so we could.
Okay, so you move to go back to the procedure that we had prior to that motion passing.
Yes.
So do I have a second? You have a second? Mm-hmm. Anyone in favor say?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against it? I guess none. Okay. So motion passes.
Okay.
So now we go back to the
whole process. I make a motion to nominate Director Urbina as chair for the next FY.
So I was going to ask for nominations. So I guess we have a nomination on the floor. Any second?
I'll second it.
Anyone in favor?
We need to have discussion. Discussion on the motion.
Yeah. A discussion on the motion.
Are you interested in doing it this for a second year? I'll ask that question.
I'll be honored to do it a second year. Any other comments or questions? So, all in favor say aye.
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 All against it? There's no one, so motion is approved, or nomination is approved. Now, can I have a motion for a vice chair? Can I nominate?
I nominate Manny.
Well, you just have a nomination, but yes, you can, Madam Chair.
I'll have a second. I second it. Everyone in favor? Everyone in favor? Yes. Say aye.
Aye.
Everyone against it? No. Yes, have it. So we have a motion approved, nomination approved for Manny to be second, vice. Now we go to secretary. Do I have a motion to nominate a secretary?
Director Ray.
I second that. Everyone in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against that? Hearing none. Nomination is approved. Do I have a motion for a vice secretary?
Assistant secretary.
You nominate Ginny? Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Anyone in favor?
Aye.
Everyone. Anyone against it? No? Nomination approved for Ginny to be vice secretary
or assistant secretary. We have not changed the thing, have we?
No, I guess it's the same. So, congratulations, everybody. We have a new board. And I guess Raymond remains as a member of the board.
Okay. We'll keep him.
All right. I'm honored. Okay.
So, where are we now? Words and presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair, we've got several awards and presentations this afternoon. Kylie Hatterley, would you come up here and join me, please? Kylie Hatterley is a utility business collection representative one in our customer service department. And Kylie just completed her bachelor's in business administration and human resource management, right, from Florida International University. So very, very proud of her. Congratulations.
Brian, is she related to someone in the company?
Yes, she is. I think her dad's out there. Our manager of T&D operations, Darren Hatterley. I know he's very proud.
Yes.
Okay, Miss Sue Ann Patton, where is she? There you are. Also known as Raya, she was Raya at Friday's Movies in the Park. Sue Ann just completed her master's in GIS from Pennsylvania State University. Very, very proud of you. Congratulations.
Wow.
We're also recognizing Amy Hernandez, who is not able to be here today. She's a customer service representative, too, in our customer service department. We're recognizing her for 15 years of service to the organization. Thank you, Amy. Mr. Santiago, Jose, why don't you come up here and join me? Jose is a customer service field inspector in our customer service department. We are recognizing Jose for 20 years of service to KUA.
Way to go.
And then Miss Julia Mason, where is she? Come on up here, Julia. Julia's our October 2021 Employee of the Month here at KUA. She's a customer service specialist in our customer service department. Several members of your team had comments to say about you. The first being, Julia is caring, loving, and really cares about our customers and bringing a smile to them and their fellow employees. Second employee said, Julia's attendance and accountability is key, being that she's always willing to work extra hours and provide the necessary needs. And the final employee said, Julia always finds a way to see the bright side of a situation. This past year has been absolutely full of changes. Julia has helped us to adapt and keep our spirits high. She always goes above and beyond to make sure our customers' needs are met and always makes a friend at the window. She has a knack for turning a customer's frown into a smile. So I want to thank you
for taking such good care of our customers. And it is an honor for you to be our October 2021 Employee of the Month. I want to introduce you to our board, beginning with our chair, Effie Levine.
This is in recognition of your commitment and service to KUA and its customers. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.
Hello. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Here's something to add to your wardrobe.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Here's free parking.
Thank you. Van Meter.
Thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
And here is one day off with pay.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And
thank
I believe this is the pay. And on that day off, you could go to the OC World Arts to see a show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I, the mayor is on the Zoom, and I know she congratulates you as well.
Thank you.
Okay, we now go in to hear the audience. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board? Seeing and hearing no one, we go on to consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve last month's agenda?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Everyone in favor say aye.
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 Anyone against it? None. So motion approved. We go on to informational presentations.
Madam Chair, we have two informational presentations for you this afternoon. The first being Kiwanis Club of Kissimmee, and Director of Corporate Communications, Tiffany Henderson, is going to introduce our guests.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Janice Welch of the Kiwanis Club of Kissimmee. The club's mission as Kiwanians is to change the world through service to children and communities. The Kiwanis Club received $1,500 in sponsorship funds from KUA last budget year in the form of mugs for their Stroll for Scholarships 5K, 10K, and KUA has sponsored the organization at various levels since 1999. And I'll now turn it over to Janice, who's here to speak.
Good afternoon. I found out at 11 this morning that I was doing this. I'm the secretary of the club, and a little later on I'll tell you why I'm secretary for life. We don't have elections like you do. Mike Harford is our president, and unfortunately Mike was hospitalized today with some medical issues. So at 11 he asked me if I would do this. Having been in the club since the early 90s, I have a fairly good background on the club. We're called Kiwanis Club of Kissimmee because that's the way it was chartered in April of 1925. We are one of the oldest Kiwanis clubs internationally. Kiwanis is an international organization. KUA, as Tiffany just said, has a long history of helping us sponsor our activities. This past year, we had our first Stroll for Scholarships. We have to have fundraisers in order to provide services to the community. And we service all of Osceola, not just Kissimmee. We have six key clubs that we sponsor at the high schools: Harmony, Celebration, Liberty, and Poinciana. Our oldest key club is Osceola High School, We have a club at Gateway High School. I'm trying to see if I left out anybody. No, those are the six high schools that we sponsor, the high school version of Kiwanis. I'll tell you a little bit more about them. What do we do with the money that we raise every year? In the past, we sponsored the Bluegrass Festival. Those of you that have been around for a while will remember that at Silver Spur, as it was called then, we'd have a big Bluegrass Festival every year. We raised quite a bit of money and gave us the money to spend in Osceola County. Everything we raise, even though we're an international organization, everything we raise stays in Osceola County as service projects. We award between six and eight $1,000 scholarships every year through the Foundation for Education. We also award three to four scholarships at the Valencia campus every year. We provide free community shredding in April. All the years up until the pandemic, we provided a Christmas party for 30 needy families, where every child in the family from newborns through 12 years old received a gift valued at around $25, $30. We encourage the families, they get a wish list to fill in, to put down something that they cannot afford to buy their child for that amount. Because of the pandemic, we no longer can do the party, but we still choose 30 families every year and provide the toys. We used to have food drives with the help of the schools and give 150 families great big banana boxes full of food over the Christmas holidays and give them a $15 Publix gift card so they could afford a turkey, a ham, whatever they wanted, a pork roast. Well, again, because of the pandemic the last couple of years, we haven't been able to do that, but we still do provide the $15 gift cards. Our fundraising has gone from raising $30,000, $40,000 a year to maybe raising $9,000 or $10,000. And as I told you, we give most of it away in scholarships. Last year, we found out that the Council on Aging food pantry had bare shelves, so we brought them $1,000. There's a homeless shelter in Kissimmee that was asking for donations, and we gave them $500. We established a 501(c) several years ago in a separate account that we call our foundation, so that anything we have coming in as donations can be tax exempt, and it has helped. We depend on KUA to sponsor us. We depend on the people who give us $50 maybe or $25. It's our club used to have, when I joined the club in the early 90s, we had 127 members. We now have eight. Eight of us do all this. Last year, we were looking for a fundraiser, and we now have what we call Stroll for Scholarships. It's out at, starts at Pioneer Village and goes on the trail at Shingle Creek. We had the race certified to get more racers to come, because it's my understanding that if they're in a certified race, it qualifies them for all other kinds of racers. We broke even last year with the race, simply because it was our first year. We were just getting in with only eight of us organizing this. we wouldn't be able to do all that we do without our key clubs. We have six. They average between 25 and 80 members, depending on the high school. The average service hour for these kids is 400 in their four-year high school experience. These kids do all kinds of things. They run blood drives. They help us with the toy shopping. They do all the toy wrapping. They come to the shredding. They come to the race and help us there. We couldn't function without them. In return, we help them go to their conventions and help them with their projects. It's supposed to be one Kiwanian for every high school. Well, we don't have enough members that can do all that, so we have one Kiwanian for all six high schools. Thank goodness for email. It's how I keep in touch with them. Without sponsorship from KUA, we couldn't do what we do. We're getting ready to send out sponsorship letters in the next month. Got the list from the chamber. And hopefully we'll get enough sponsors to be able to increase what we do. We'd love to give a lot more scholarships. Last year we had 113 applicants for scholarships. We only had money for six. We don't use any of the money or any of the goods we get for administration. All eight of our members pay dues, and most of us put in our own money for administrative costs. We would like to grow. We would like to have more members. But with social media now, businesses just don't find it necessary to join the service clubs. They don't. That's what we've run into. I don't know how much longer we're going to exist with only eight members, because I'm in my late 70s and I'm one of the youngest members. You know, so I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to do this, but as long as we receive sponsorships and get the help from KUA and the community, we're going to do what we do. We also belong to what is called District 10. It's Orange, Osceola, and Seminole. And sometimes the district has different things they raise funds for. District 10 supports the diabetic camp. So every year we pay for one child to go spend a week at the diabetes camp in Orange County. Last year, the whole district had what they call tons of tuna, collecting cans of tuna. Our key clubs collected almost 1,000 cans of tuna in Osceola County. Half were given to the Council on Aging and half to the St. Cloud Food Bank. So everything we get gets back out there. We keep nothing. So the more help we get, the more we can return to the community. Like I say, even though it's Kiwanis Club of Kissimmee, we service Poinciana, Celebration, Harmony, St. Cloud, Kissimmee, all of Osceola County. Any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you.
With what you have. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your support, and we will look forward to it continuing, believe me. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. We also have with us today Warren Hoagland. He is Senior VP of Community Action Services at the Osceola Council on Aging. The mission of the Council on Aging is to provide services to enable independence and self-sufficiency for seniors and disabled adults, the disadvantaged, and families in poverty. Specifically, they're here to talk about how contributions to the Good Neighbor Fund by customers in KUA have improved the quality of life for members of our community. Thank you so much thank for you. Being here.
Let me first start off by saying thank you so much for what you do. It's the volunteers in our community that really make the biggest difference. And thank you. I needed that. So thank you for all the volunteers. And I tell you, it's our seniors that are our last hope when it comes to volunteering. And so we got to do something to get these young people volunteering again. So thank you for letting me talk today. I'm very honored to be here. KUA is one of my favorite agencies to work with. And the KUA Good Neighbor Fund is just, I can't say enough about it. So Osceola Council on Aging, you probably think, when you think Osceola Council on Aging, you think seniors. Well, that makes sense because we do seniors. That's what we do. When it comes to senior services, we do it all, soup to nuts. You can't think of a program that we don't do or we have created out of a need. But a lot of people don't know about the community action services that the Council on Aging does. And, I got to click here. We have a wide array of services that focus on not just seniors and disabled, but also low-income families. So, and actually, low-income families is probably the majority of what the Council on Aging does. And some of the services that we do under the Community Action, and I apologize, I haven't spoken in front of a group in years, so if I fumble, forgive me. One of our biggest programs is our utility assistance programs, and I'll go over that as briefly as I can. We have a Building Strong Families program that focuses on case management for families. Obviously, our food pantry, our weatherization program that actually, and our chore and Helping Bound Heroes that actually goes out into the homes and does maintenance and energy efficiency, all sorts of stuff to homes. Our indigent health clinic that really doesn't have anything to do with seniors at all. It's for people that don't have health insurance and are 18 and older. And then we have a little side project that I do on the side. It's called the Osceola Social Services Network, where I bring everybody together that is in social services to try and address the needs of poverty. So our utility assistance programs, and this is probably the biggest thing that I do in community action. Utility assistance is probably the top three needs. Well, it is consistently been the top three needs in our Tri-County area, and I argue the whole nation when it comes to poverty. Arguably, the Council on Aging has the most comprehensive energy assistance program in the state. And we might not be the biggest, but we are the most comprehensive. And the reason we are most comprehensive is because of all the programs that we have. The Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, affectionately known as LIHEAP, our Emergency Home Energy Assistance for the Elderly, EHEAP, of course, our KUA Good Neighbor Program, our TOHO Assistance Program that helps with water, our St. Cloud Utility Assistance Program that also helps with water, and now we have a new water program that's coming down from the feds called LIWAP. So when it comes to utility assistance, there's nothing we can't do. And in here you'll see the 100% or 150% FPG. That's Federal Poverty Guidelines, and that's our eligibility guidelines for how people qualify for the program. I'll get into that shortly. So KUA Good Neighbor. We've been doing this, shockingly. I was talking to Susan on the phone. We were like, how long have we been doing this? And I went back into my records, and I've got records all the way back to 2007. So we've been doing this quite a while. So I put some numbers together, and you can see how much we spent from. We started off with about $30,000, and we've gone all the way up to $150,000 during the COVID times. And right now we have a little over $50,000. In this contract. Actually, we just got an additional $50,000 that was put in graciously by you guys so we can address more people. But you can see the chart there, and this is mostly all charts because it's a utility assistance program. It's not like Meals on Wheels where I can show you families and people hugging and doing all sorts of wonderful stuff. So you're getting charts today. But you can see 2020, that big peak, that's COVID. You'll see that throughout the presentation. So our people served in KU Good Neighbor Fund. So we started off kind of small, and then you can see we steadily increase. Interestingly enough, you'll see the number of households on the left-hand side, and then there's the number of individuals. That's how many people are actually in each household. And if you see around 2014, 15, 16, 17, and 18, we started addressing, I think, more families because you see the family size is increasing around that time. And I just wanted to make note of that and also that peak in 2020. And on the next slide, we talk about cost per household. This was interesting. In the beginning, the average bill per household was about a little under $200 a month. And then as the years went on, it went up and peaked around 2013. And then we started to decline a little bit. And oddly enough, in 2020, when we did the most assistance, it was the second to lowest average bill per household. Thought that was worth noting. So who do we serve in the KUA Good Neighbor program? Most of who we serve are single female parents, unfortunately. And then the next one is our two-parent households. And then that next column is our single persons, which are mostly seniors and disabled in those categories. And then so on and so on. So what does federal poverty guidelines mean? This is kind of a simple chart on how much somebody makes per family size. So if you take a family of three, with the LIHEAP program, if they make $2,745, we can help them, or less. If they make over that, we can't help them. With the KUA program, we've bumped it up to 200%, so we can serve a wider array of people, and we can help people that are just generally typically out of work for a month. Say they've gotten COVID has been the recent one, or they've lost their job temporarily and they just need a bump up and help while they're getting out of the hole that they've gotten themselves into. So I just wanted to show you that. So the most people we serve, and this makes a lot of sense, is the poverty levels. So from literally having no money to 50% of the federal poverty guideline, that's the majority of the people we serve. A lot of that is those people that have lost jobs. So those people are our biggest customers. And then it goes up as the poverty level goes up. And this is some of the dollars that we spent in our KUA Good Neighbor Fund from 2007 to 2021. And then I also put the LIHEAP next to it, just so you can kind of see how much dollars roughly that are coming out just for utility assistance in our county. So KUA is specific to KUA customers, but LIHEAP can include KUA customers, Duke Energy customers, and OUC customers. And I'll just note, in 2011, is it? Yeah, 2011, that was, you'll see that we had like $1.2 million in federal funding from LIHEAP, and that was around the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. And then if you look in 2020, obviously we're $1.4 million, and that was during the pandemic. So you can see, as problems arise, the funding increases. I have to tell you guys, I know a lot of this is just numbers, but really the customers love you guys. Now, I work with Duke Energy and I work with OUC, and they are two totally different companies. They're as lovely as they like to think they are nowhere near when it comes to customer service that you guys are. You actually care about your clients. We work mostly with Laisha when we're working with them, and she generally cares about her clients. So, and that is just reflected in everything you do. And I just want to say how wonderful it is that you that you guys help. I know it's some of it. We get the joy of working with our clients and hearing the thank yous and the and you've saved us and all sorts of stuff. But I don't know how to reflect that back to you. But as I say that, I got a voicemail today from a little guy that just got out of the hospital, and he came to his house. He had no power, and we had to help him really quick. I actually got to help him, and he left a nice recording. Do you mind me playing it?
No.
I don't think he'll mind sharing it.
4163. I wanted to call back and say a very special thank you to Warren, to everybody on Council on Aging. My electric is back on. Please inform Warren that my electric is on. And I want to speak to him about how I can repay you guys for the help you gave me today. I'm going to pray for your organization. It's a tremendous blessing and a tremendous enhancement to our society here in Kissimmee. And I'm really proud to know you guys. It brings a tear to my eye to know that people still care and that they can do such a nice job. Very much appreciated. I'll call back and talk.
He'll talk to me later, but I don't know how to get that to you. So I like to share some of those things. He was saying thank you to us and me particularly, but that is, I'm wanting to reflect that back to you and all your customer service reps and everything that they do and everything that you guys do on the board to your staff and even in your IT department makes everything so much smoother for everybody. So I just want to say thank you and keep up the great work. And I truly, truly appreciate everything you guys do.
Thank you.
Any questions about KUA Good Neighbor?
Yeah, I have one question. Do you all work with Orange County as well as Osceola, or are you strictly Osceola?
Generally, we're strictly Osceola, but we have the EHEAT program. It's for seniors. We have just recently been contracted the Orange and Osceola contract, so we do work with Orange County residents that are seniors in Orange County, but we also work really closely with the LIHEAP program in Orange County, which is a huge, huge program. They get a lot of funding because of Orange County. So.
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
You did a good job.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We now move on to public hearing. There's nothing there. All business. New business.
Yes, Madam Chair, we've got three items of new business this evening. The first being staff's recommendation for award of contract for banking services. To tell us more about that is Vice President of Finance Administration Kevin Crawford.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. The three items, as Brian mentioned to you, banking services, conduit installation, and the third one, fuel services. When Larry and I present equally interesting items, we have to arm wrestle to see who gets the pick. And so obviously I drew the short straw with these two. His will be a lot more exciting. So just bear with me on my two. Not quite as much fun on banking services, but a necessary thing nonetheless. So I just wanted to share with you. We were up for renewal on our banking services contract. And just to give you an idea of what kind of flows through the coffers here at KUA. On a monthly basis, we process nearly 1,100 direct deposit payroll transactions, 150 accounts payable checks to vendors, 715 customer refund checks for those customers who are not under our service anymore but are issuing refunds for various reasons, and about 1,200 payments via ACH. So you can kind of just see the magnitude of how we utilize those banking services agreements. And then additionally, on the receipt side, we process nearly, as you would expect, 84,000, roughly the number of customers accounts we have, receipts per month. That's for an average of about $17.5 million on a monthly basis that comes through and is sent through our bank account. And then also KUA maintains a monthly balance at the bank of about 1/12 of that annual amount, or about $18 million in that account. So because of that contract coming to an end, we issued an RFP for banking services, as it's a really critical part of what we do in the on the finance side of the house, and it covers a lot of territory for us. And so that banking services RFP covers pricing for your typical depository services, which comprise most of the things that I just mentioned previously. They also incorporate integrated payables solutions and the purchasing card program. And most of you are probably familiar with that. We call it the P-card program. It's where the bank issues a credit card for employees to use as they travel or they make purchases on behalf of KUA. And when we do that and those cards are used, we earn a rebate on that spend amount because there's a merchant fee involved that the vendor is charged, and KUA gets a small portion of that that the bank then uses as a refund. So a part of that process are not just the costs that we incur for those services, but the means by which we can reduce the overall financial impact of those services and their costs, and ultimately to our customers. So KUA received three responses of those three responses for those three RFPs. And the current provider, incidentally, Regions Bank, scored a 98.33 out of a possible 100 points, which is an outstanding score. Included in their response, and these are some of the proposals that went into their response, was a combined depository service and lockbox operations established with RFP awarded beginning February 1st, 2007. So we have been with this bank for quite a while. We have always gotten satisfactory service, and in the event that we did not get it, which was infrequent, we were able to share that with them and obtain recourse with that bank. They also have offered a one-time retention bonus of $10,000 included in their proposal. The earnings credit rate equals the Fed funds rate plus 5 basis points. And this rate increases when the Fed increases interest rates. And kind of what that translates into is if we keep a compensatory balance of that 18 or so million in that account that I shared with you earlier, that amount, what basically happens is the interest that we earn on that in those overnight investments, it gets applied to the fees that we incur for doing business with the bank. So all of those individual ACH charges, the wire accounts charges, the debits for the checks, all those typical fees are covered through the interest earnings that we have at the bank. And the net effect, the net cost of all of those, is extremely minimal. And it's typically, based on most estimates, within the hundreds of dollars on an annual basis. And so the Fed funds rate plus 5% is actually not bad at all in the current environment. And we're able to utilize that that costing mechanism to reduce those costs to our customers. This is a longstanding practice. Most banks do this. But what we like is with the Fed funds rate, which if you're watching the news, you realize interest rates are probably going to continue to go up in the short to long term. And as those rates rise, then we intend to get more of that money back in the term of interest earnings to either further offset those costs for the services and also to earn additional revenue and income for KUA and for its customers. Additionally, as a benefit of staying with your current provider, as you all would expect, so there's no conversion costs and a minimum 3 months staff time saved. I don't know if you've ever been a party to switching banks, and maybe in your personal life you probably have. It's an extraordinary amount of work, and it's on a commercial scale to scale what we do here at KUA, even more so. It combines a lot of time, the finance side of the house. Jeff's group in IT does an extraordinary amount of work because everything is data files that get transferred back and forth. And so that really was an advantageous opportunity to be able to utilize that and save that time. And then an estimated annual cost of the $54,000, and that's all the fees I mentioned to you earlier. That's about what a year's worth of costs accumulate for us on the expense side of the house when we use all those different services that they provide. And even those themselves on the renegotiated basis are about 10% less than what they previously are. So, again, it's always good wisdom to go back out with an RFP. And even if you end up with the same provider, you often end up with less costs. And this is an example of that. So we only, again, had three providers, I believe. Wells Fargo was one and TD Bank. And so those were some of the ones that provided. But, again, their pricing, their experience, the breadth and depth of the services that they provide, their familiarity with our operations and the integrations into what we do did not warrant us expending those additional funds to move into an entirely separate banking system. And again, given the fact that we've been very satisfied with their service, we felt quite comfortable with their provision and for recommending them as a service. So that's sort of the short answer of it. It's a good all-around opportunity for us. The one thing that we do note is, you know, our lockbox service is the local box where customers remit their payments to. And incorporated into this new plan is to migrate that lockbox physical address to Birmingham, Alabama, which is where this bank is based. So what that typically would do in a realistic sense is going to add maybe a one-day time for the mail to get from where it previously was being mailed. So a customer remits their bill. It might take one day longer for it to get to that lockbox and to be processed. Unfortunately, because of the confluence of different types of electronic payment methodologies, a lot of banks are pulling back from lockbox services. And certainly they are centralizing those services so that they're not outside their service territories. They're just not profitable ventures for them because, as we said earlier and as we talked about with you on different occasions, folks are aggregating to electronic payment methods. And that's a good thing. It saves them postage. It saves them time. And it encourages folks to utilize a more efficient technology. So that's not altogether a bad thing. But that is just one caveat that we wanted to share with you, just in the event that you're in the grocery store and a customer says, hey, I got to mail my bill to Birmingham, you know, why not Orlando? And so if we wanted to do that, that would obviously be an additional cost. Companies do offer those lockbox services on a local basis, but they are quite expensive. And we didn't think that the cost of the few customers that would benefit would not be worth the while of paying that additional cost. So we're pleased with that. We think continuing to promote the e-bill payments and folks paying in that method is going to continue to drive those costs down. And I think what you're going to continue to see is these bigger banks do away with a lot of that lockbox service and ultimately make it more expensive in the process because they want to drive consumer behavior to what's a least cost alternative for them. So nonetheless, given all of those parameters and all the evaluation that we provided, we do as staff recommend that we execute a 3-year contract with Regions Bank, which includes all the services I mentioned to you in the presentation, including lockbox, purchasing card, integrated payables, and the initial term of a 3-year with 2 1-year extensions. And so I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about that. Yes, ma'am.
With the lockbox being, I think it stated in our materials that it would be moving to Alabama.
Within the end of the year, yes, ma'am.
Will the mail take longer to get to that location than where they've been sending checks? And is KUA going to notify people that use that service to allow an additional day or two?
Yes, ma'am. That's a very good question. We, as soon as we saw that, our folks in finance, and Larry Webb is here, he's the manager of Treasury, he started working with Susan Poston's group, making them aware so that we could begin a campaign of education for our customers and say, hey, listen, it's a new address, and targeting specifically those folks who would be affected by that transition. And so we do see that as an opportunity to educate our customers, and because obviously we don't want to penalize them. We want to encourage them to adopt that more timely payment behavior. So that's what we're going to do.
And Kevin, and on top of that, the post office themselves are going to be delaying. They just announced that type of mail a couple of days more. It's going to be slower and so forth. So that will also increase the time.
Absolutely.
Time before, so
absolutely.
Better educating the.
And what we would love to do is, as we always try to do, is continue to educate our customers to say, listen, you know, that's not the most optimal way to pay your bill. You know, we have AmScot, which is locally, which will take cash. We will take you here in the lobby and electronically. So we really do want to push them to that. And, you know, it's not the ideal way to do it, obviously, but it's so much easier for them. I think once they adopt that payment methodology, you know, we get a high response rate of satisfaction from that. So, but you're absolutely right. We want to make sure that they're aware well in advance so that it's not impending on their opportunity and their ability to pay.
And second, great presentation, and thank you for the details with the presentation. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Any other question?
Minor question. Is there any number statistics of all of the customers who pay? What is the percentage that use this method, using the lockbox? I mean, is it a great number, ballpark?
I do actually have that breakdown. And so Chris Regal, who is in our IT department, provides a monthly breakdown of the utilization of the different payment methodologies. And if I can find that document, we do compile that, and he sends it around. And so basically what it looks like is we still have a few about 6,400 customers who mail into that lockbox location of our current customers.
So that's like 8% of the total universe.
Yes, ma'am. And conversely, what we see and what we're starting to trend to see, and particularly with COVID, is those folks migrating to those electronic payment methodologies because they do realize that there is convenience and they don't have to deal with that anticipated float issue. But that's about what we see. And just for FYI, we do see about, and I have the total number, our numbers would decrease because of COVID, but we have about 3,000 to 4,000 people that walk into the lobby on a monthly basis. And Susan, I'm looking at you. I think that's about right. Some a market decrease. And again, we really strongly encourage our folks. It's a cheaper way for them to pay the bills, and it's certainly more efficient and safer to have to do that than take a check to somewhere and mail it, or you know, a chance at getting lost. So we do want to encourage them to do that. But that's roughly numbers. But we do collect that data if you're ever interested in seeing.
Yeah, that's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you.
I move approval.
Second.
Everyone in favor of approving RFP 2140 CV?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against that? No. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Well done, Kevin. Madam Chair, the next item is staff's recommendation on the award of conduit installation and related services. And Larry Mattern, Vice President of Operations, is here to tell us about that.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. As it says, it's a conduit installation and related services. A conduit is what our cable runs through. And for this particular item, it's mostly underground, in fact, all underground. 70% of our distribution wiring is underground wiring, and more as we build each development. Most of it, distribution is what goes right to the houses. So the conduit, that's what you'll see, that's what gets put in the ground. It comes in various sizes, and it's usually made of plastic and always gray when it's electrical. And that's a typical underground installation that you would routinely see back in any time in an open field where you can just dig a ditch. On a short term, we can do that. But living in a populated area, we have to have a machine and do directional boring, and companies specialize at that. And what that does is you can go under roadways, parking lots, as it says, underwater, lawns, the buildings, all other obstructions, and directional boring. Those are the machines that we get a contract with, and other professionals use that to get our conduit put in. So we put this out, and here's a recommendation, but to go through it, there's two companies. We only had two companies bid on it. One is the Fischel company, and you'll see their truck says Team Fischel. That's who we have presently. We've had them for the last 4 years, 5 years almost. So that's been the company that's done it. They do good work. They do work for us and others in this area. And then Transportation Systems Company put in two. They were a little higher overall. So we'd like to have two, because as construction goes, we'd like to have the flexibility if Fischel is not able to work get enough jobs done. If we have two big developments going on, for instance, we'd have this flexibility. Or in an emergency, we'd have flexibility. But we'd like the primary to be Fischel. They were a little lower in cost. And so this is your recommendation that we have a three-year term with 2 1-year extensions available at our discretion. And that's, I'm open for questions.
So you will use both? So there'll be a contract with each?
There'll be a contract with each.
But this is a contract for just Fischel.
This is a contract for Fischel and for Transportation Systems. We will choose to use Fischel first because they're lower cost, and we have experience with them.
Now there's an and in that, so.
Okay.
I move approval.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion approved. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Madam Chair, and then the final piece of new business is a staff's recommendation for approval of award of fuel services. And Mr. Kevin Crawford again to tell us about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My last item to present to you this evening is, as Brian mentioned, the approval of the award of the contract for our fuel services. And again, I always like to give you a background of, give you context of how we use and how much we use it. So we have about 140 vehicles here in KUA that fueled up at our KUA pumps last year. And if you've been over, and I know all of you have, to that to the Lackey Davis, they sit right about in the middle between the Davis and the Fleet Building. And, of course, they're underground and buried. But we have the capacity that we have two 10,000-gallon tanks of unleaded, and we have one 10,000-gallon tank of number 2 diesel fuel. We have 5 generator tanks and one 500-gallon tank of biodiesel fuel. And as we were going through today, some of you may notice today when we were delivering the food to the appreciation luncheon that some of the digger derricks that drove through are powered by biodiesel. So that's, if you're wondering, what do we use those for? We have some rigs that do run on that biodiesel, so that's why we have those tanks. But in general terms, from last year, we used 102,000 gallons of unleaded fuel and diesel combined at our pumps from September 20 to September 2021. And we spent about $214,000 was spent on fuel during that time frame. And you're going, doing the math in your head, going, man, that's a lot cheaper than I pay at the pump. Well, there's a reason for that, obviously, and that is because we do purchase on a wholesale basis, and I'll go into the pricing breakdown in just a minute and how that's possible. But the bid specs, when we sent this out, we asked for a preferred 48-hour delivery time, and we also asked for an emergency response plan. And because of being first providers, we have a little bit higher standard than if we were just, under the organization with the fleet requirement to be able to respond to that. And so because of those more scrutinizing requirements that we have and sort of the higher hurdle, we tend to get less responses from that. The pricing breakdown on the responses, and this was part of what we asked them to provide, We wanted to see an independent wholesale price reporting service using Orlando, Florida prices. So there is a daily index that prices what these types of fuel. And I believe the obviously for the two different types, for the 87-octane fuel, there's one. And I believe there's also one for the diesel, Neil, if I'm not mistaken. And so we price off of that index for what they charge us. And again, that's a wholesale index. So this pricing breakdown provides an additional discount for one-time deliveries to fill the large tanks from empty, which almost never happens because in the pricing you see that that is actually a discount. But in general speaking, what you're going to see is that wholesale index price with an increase added on to that because primarily of transportation, as you would imagine, and logistics being the biggest contributor to their expense situation in this particular these bids. But it also does contain a fixed yearly price for deliveries. And what that means, and I don't want to mislead you, that our price is fixed over the year. It is not. The index price moves, but the delivery component over the five-year contract stays at a certain fixed percent. And for the, just as for instance, and you saw that on the pricing bid sheet, I believe it's 32.5 cents on per gallon based off of what they pay on wholesale, which when I started running the numbers on it today and last week, I said, even all in, and Neil, you can feel free to jump me in here if I'm wrong, but two things I wanted you to know. We put this out there, and we had 27 people, 27 companies look at it and go, sure, I'll take a look at providing KUA a wholesale price under the terms they wanted. We had one qualified respondent who said they were interested in pursuing this with us. And Neil, I believe it is the current provider, if I'm not mistaken, Petroleum Traders. And so there's a lot of reasons for that because we look at it and go, why are we reaching a bigger audience? But from what we gather, the logistics portion of this, the long haul requirements to get that fuel from A to B represent obviously the biggest part of the cost. So their margins on the fuel themselves are very slim. But where they make up their money is on the margins for profit and for travel. And those are baked in to those index increases that we see that we pay. And still, when I broke it out, and this, I was really quite surprised when I looked at the numbers on our last invoice. We pay with taxes all inclusive. This was back in May, so May was, gas was cheaper obviously then, but it was $2.43 was what we paid then, and at the pump you would have generally paid about $2.81 per gallon for that same price. So a lot of numbers get baked into what you see at the pump. We're getting a wholesale price. We're not for profit, so we don't have to bake profit in. And you're not seeing the recouping in our numbers of what they would, on a commercial for-profit basis, add in or bake into that number for tank maintenance and things like that, because that's categorized in a different part of our O&M budget. So that's why it appears to be cheaper. So I wouldn't let that throw you off too much. But on generally speaking, we do get it cheaper than what you pay at the pump. So the added advantage of having it proximal to our needs on premises and on an emergency response basis is also that it is cheaper for us to buy it on that basis. And you can see that, as I said earlier, the capacity of our tanks, it's not extraordinarily large. We don't have what you would see down at, Racetrack or any of those other places, but we just keep enough to maintain. And the taxes, a lot of the federal excise taxes, a lot of the environmental regulations still apply to us. Neil does a lot of reporting on that basis to make sure that our tanks meet standards. So those are all costs that aren't reflected in that true per gallon cost that maybe a bigger entity would be reflecting in. So that's why there's also that discrepancy, because we thought, man, we should open a gas tank business if that's the case. But obviously that wouldn't be feasible for us. But I did just want you to see that the difference between wholesale and what you see at the tank is significant, and that's why. So based on those specs that were required, We had the one respondent who does, and I additionally mentioned briefly an emergency response plan. And I will say this to you in a nutshell. There are no 100% guarantees in a hurricane that fuel is going to get where it needs to go. We know this from living in Florida. The best you're going to get from any of these entities who respond is that they will make your delivery a priority delivery because they know that we are first responders. They also have alternative levels that they have to keep in their tanks and reserves, and they have multiple tanks throughout the Florida area, Orlando, Tampa, St. Pete, and there's a two or three different other locations where they have those tanks that they can go and pull from if they need to. So, and I will reiterate, we've never had an issue, Neil, in any event where we could not get fuel for our vehicles to first respond. Am I correct? So that's some comfort for us. No guarantees, but to this point, we have not had any issues. So they've served us well in that capacity. So given the response that we've seen, the experience that we've had, the pricing we've obtained, which is very competitive to what we see in the market, again, KUA staff does recommend that we pursue this contract with Petroleum Traders for the three with the 2 1-year extensions if the board sees fit to do that.
Any questions, anyone?
I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation of staff.
And I'll second it.
Anyone in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Staff reports.
One staff report, Madam Chair. Operations semi-annual.
Good evening again, everyone. The good news is I don't think Kevin follows me again after this. So, hi, buddy. So, in operations, we're feeling some pressure on wholesale rates. Of course, operations is we are part of outside organizations representing KUA. At FGU, we are getting some assistance on keeping some of the fuel rates down, because they found prepaid gas deals for us at FMPA, and that takes 30 cents off of every MMBTU or decatherm. It's the same amount of gas. That's how they sell it. Gas has went from $2, high $2 last year, to this today was $6 for one of those. But we got a 30-cent discount. As much as that helped, it helps. Florida Municipal Power Agency, FMPA, they're helping keep the price down on wholesale the best they can because they're selling our excess capacity on the open market, and we have deals with other cities. So because of that, that's being rolled back in. That's helping us keep it. At this point, they're still able to keep that $70 megawatt promise, but if it stays at $6, we may not make it. The power pool, nothing's exciting happening here. We're still dispatching at the most economic units. We were told by OUC they have plans in the near future, by 2025, to shut down Unit 1 coal plant, not to switch it to gas. They've bought that were retired units that were used for selling to others, and they bought this in Holopah, and it's going to be used for their backup if they need power. So they'll be retiring the coal plant by 2025. And that brings us to operations, what we're doing here. Well, first of all, every report I show you how the power plants are doing compared to the rest of the power companies in the country. And this is the most current national averages. And as you can see, that we are above the average in all. In fact, our strategic goal is for Unit 3 and 4 to be above, because they are our prime movers, and they do affect our rate if they don't run. See, Unit 1 is below for 2021, but that everything's taken into account. Whether you are on a forced outage, which would be if you tripped offline because of a maintenance problem, that wasn't the issue here. This was, you also get charged for routine outages that you have to take it down and to add things or do your inspections. Well, actually, there was an outage on our power line down there, as I've reported to in the past, and Unit 1 is connected through that area. So while that power line was out of service, Unit 1 wasn't able to show it was available, so it hurt its numbers there. Speaking of availability, we're doing great. I can't say enough about our crews and every part of the department that supports them and all support you give to make sure we have the proper people and equipment to do these things. We've had some fortunate summer with not a lot of electric storms that we've seen in the past, but we've had a few, and we've done some improvements through a committee that studies whether we have proper grounding and we inspect the lines more, and all these things we've done has reflected this good number. This number on our SAIDI is one of the lowest in the state of Florida. And, of course, your safety is going to be reflected the same way. We have less outages, too, because of the measures being taken. Okay, we finished. You've seen this reported two or three times as we went through each over $100,000 piece. The Hort substation transformer is now in and operational. And that's at 40. It's the size is a 45 MVA, which is about the same as megawatts. And that's the same size as the other two. This makes the third in that substation. We put it there for additional growth. We have two feeders we've attached to this now, and we're going to add two more later. As it operates now, it's since we have three, it's the way the feeder load went, it's one-third, one-third, one-third. Each a transformer has about the same load. In a dire emergency, if at a load like yesterday, we could survive as it sits today with one transformer. With these three, we're not pushing the transformers, to damage levels, and we have lots of room for growth. We have about 70% of growth room in there right now. So that brings us to K9. Let's talk about planned maintenance. So there's a lot of planned maintenance going on. Unit 2 is off right now, and it's just routine maintenance going on, inspections, no major equipment being torn apart or taken. It's just mostly inspections, checking for leaks, minor repairs. Unit 4's outage will follow. Everything's out of order here. Unit 4's outage follows. Same type of outage. Just go and make inspections. Make sure that anything that you can't fix or work on while you're online, we'll get that done. Unit 4 just got through running 185 days, which was a record for itself. It broke its own record. It's ran more than Treasure Coast. And that's quite a long for a time without a trip, without a planned outage. And that brings us to the big outage coming up. And that's Unit 3. And Unit 3 actually is in excess of 200 days running continuous right now and will be in far excess of that by November 1 when this outage starts. So this outage, this is the major outage. Some of you were on the board and seen when we had a major outage on Unit 4 and got to see some of the equipment tore apart. One of the things we'll do here is we're taking the generator rotor out, and that's what's being hanging there. What that is, that's what we turn into an electromagnet, and we spin it inside where you see it's pulled out, where you see the red wire behind the guy in the green, the brown shirt. It's usually in there, spins, and that's what makes electricity. You spin a magnet inside of a coil of wire. It's simple, but it's not. So the magnet, it'll be taken out, and it'll be shipped to Virginia for a rewind. One of the reasons we send that out, because since you see it's long and it spins, it gets rebalanced up there. They'll put it on a machine and spin it up to the speed that we would have it in there to make sure that it's in good balance. Now, the stator winding, as you can see, it's all inside there. They'll do that in place. They'll go in and take out that old copper there and put new copper in. And all this is going to be about $3 million. Yeah, we got to spend money to save money to have the efficient machines run. The steam turbine, it's going to have routine work done on. If you see on the right-hand side, that's where these two left-hand things set usually. And we have the steam turbine is actually two pieces. You have the high-pressure end. It sits in, and we put the first high-pressure steam hits it, goes back into the boiler, gets reheated again, and spins the second half. What we're doing with these turbines, we're just going to clean up the blades, see if there's any damage anywhere. We're going to put all new seals so we don't lose steam around. This is the big dollar, replace the turbine rotor. So this has been here operating since about 2001. So the rotor, the bar that goes right in the middle of that with all the blades, is just by itself, that's being replaced. That'd be brand new. On the left-hand side, we're upgrading those for a little over $1 million for the upgrade, the parts themselves. We're talking a total cost of this upgrade, $6 million. We're going to replace those. That's going to give us a little more power. So that's going to so we'll get some more megawatts out of this machine after this. So that's money well spent. The rest of that you see in the center there, where the hot gas path goes through, that's going to be put refurbished parts. They'll be taken off, refurbished parts be put on, and it'll be put together. And Jeannie, would you like me to get into some numbers of some clearances or things? I know you like a lot of detail on this. So we are putting the new blades on. We're going to refurbish all the rest. And then its generator would just be taken out for an inspection. There's no reason to believe through our electrical tests we've done that that generator needs to be sent out or have any major work done. And that is it. Are there any questions?
Wow. Any questions?
No, I was around when you took us, when the other motor got out, and it was fascinating. Fascinating what they do.
Maybe around, it won't be opened up in right. time for the November meeting, but if any of y'all would like prior to the December meeting to go down there to look at Unit 3 during its maintenance, let us know. We'll schedule it.
If you haven't done it, you probably should.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
So what is next? Here, the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Just a few updates. You've probably seen the news reports on the infrastructure bill, the haggling in Washington. Right now, the Democrats are not in agreement with what they want to do. They're not going to pass the bipartisan infrastructure plan unless they agree to pass the reconciliation infrastructure plan. And it's the second reconciliation infrastructure plan which gives us concern. Most notably, as I've mentioned before, there is a clean energy standard in the draft of that reconciliation bill, which would be very expensive to our customers and difficult to attain. I noticed that Senator Manchin from West Virginia has pushed back very strongly on elements of the reconciliation that relate to that. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I think the president said it doesn't matter if it's 6 minutes, 6 days, or 6 weeks. I know they are hoping to have it done by the November, because I know that the state of Virginia has an election in play, but I don't think it's going to get done by the time of that, but probably by the end of the year. And just can't predict it, but I would imagine that they will find a way to agree on something, but it won't be $3.5 trillion, the reconciliation plan. As we sit right now, the House Homeland Security Committee just passed out a Cyber Incident Reporting Act of 2021. And the APPA sent some details. They haven't had a chance to review it more than this, but what they do know is that it would require, if it becomes law, it would require utilities like KUA to report any cyber incident to CISA, whom we already work with, within 72 hours of an incident. It doesn't mention the penalties that I've complained about before, and we've talked to APPA. I know that Director Van Meter mentioned it before. Whether you're doing it on a percentage or should, you know, if you're going to have penalties, you need to take into account that some utilities have a lot smaller footprint in the world and put a lot less risk to the outside world than these large investor-owned utilities. But I don't know that that bill contains penalties because it's not mentioned in the release we just got from APPA. So we'll stay on top of that. It's passed one committee, still has a ways to go. And then also the APPA legislative rally, they're still, I believe, looking at whether or not it's going to be in person next year or virtual. It is scheduled for February 28th through March 2nd. So if any of you are thinking that you would like to attend in person, I'm sure that Letitia through the executive office will be reaching out to you to ascertain your desire to do that. I hope it will be, but I think they're still concerned about security and COVID. If you can't go to the House offices, then there's really no point. I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions? Anyone? Nope. Thank you. General Manager.
There are your reminders. I look forward to seeing every one of you that can be there on the 12th for the KUA lighting up of Broadway. Should be a nice event. And on behalf of all the employees here at KUA, we thank you for the luncheon earlier today. So.
The luncheon was wonderful today. We enjoyed seeing a lot of people that came by. It was very nice. And the food was great, too. Any other questions, anyone? Raymond?
Just that for my first luncheon, I thought that was a wonderful thing that KUA did. I felt it ran very efficiently. almost Chick-fil-A style. And even with people still in their vehicles, I felt I was still able to talk to each person and see how their day was going and how they enjoy working for KUA. Other than that, I wanted to wish Tiffany a one-year anniversary. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And that's it for me.
Thank you. You, Ray?
I'd just like to thank all the employees that came out for lunch today. It was nice seeing everybody's smiling face. I wish I could remember names and faces, but don't expect that of me. Sorry. Thanks.
I was making comments about how beautiful everybody looks. So we have a crew that is so good looking. My goodness, congratulations to everybody. It was great seeing everybody. Thank you again for that luncheon. Jeannie?
Yes, sorry, I didn't make it, but I had a house that didn't have a sewer that was flowing. So I was waiting for a plumber. But I'm sure it was wonderful because it always is. And, of course,
yeah,
I agree with anybody up here that we're just so appreciative of everybody that works here. You just do such a good job. And it's not just the job. It's the spirit in which you do it. It's so impressive to me that you all are like a big family and you help each other out and you work together well. And that's unusual in a large company. So congratulations on that.
Everything's well said. I can't add much more to that. Thank you.
Yeah, the ladies that put the luncheon together or whoever put the luncheon together did a great job. Excellent. Thank you so much, everyone. A meeting is now adjourned.